ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Welcome to another episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. This week, we're joined by Daily Maverick journalist Takutswa Pongweni to take us into this past week's The Gathering. Then, our local news publications suffering because of tech giants? Has X become a safe space for cyberbullies? One activist says yes.
What used to be, for a lot of people, a source of conversation, news and community has now shifted absolutely for the worse.
Later, Nigeria comes down hard on plastic pollution. But is it the best solution? And Gauteng's Green Army is uplifting communities one veggie garden at a time. Let's get into it. Takutswa, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Just been battling with the heat, but all good.
So I want to kick things off with a huge event that's become synonymous with Daily Maverick. It's, of course, the annual The Gathering. Last week, the Daily Maverick team hosted The Gathering 2024, and there was a strong focus on elections, it being an election year, of course. So firstly, for those who don't know necessarily what The Gathering is about, can you tell us a little bit more about what the aim of it is?
So The Gathering is Daily Maverick's flagship event. It happens every year. They bring together South Africa's most influential leaders from all sectors of society for some robust discussions. This year, their focus was all election-based, as you said. So there were some exciting panels on crime and corruption, coalitions, new blood, you know, listening to some of the political candidates like Zongisi Zibe and what a coalition government could look like.
There was a big focus, from what I took from it, on active citizenship. And this, of course, included the power of voting, the role of activism, and how to really reignite people's interest in politics and wanting to safekeep our democracy. I think for me, you just having mentioned Songezo Zibe's comment on being politically active, his comment stood out for me where he said, quote, "We have believed in a lie in South Africa that in order to participate in politics meaningfully, you must be a professional politician. I think we must try as hard as far as possible to dismiss that notion." That, for me, really summed up The Gathering 2024. Can you take us through some of the conversation points that stood out for you?
My highlight of the day was probably Mbali Ntuli's keynote address. She's a former politician and the founder of Groundwork Collective, which is an organization that aims to teach communities about their civic rights to assist with empowering themselves in their lives. And she's been doing some incredible work in recent months focused on the voting process. She really stressed the importance of not being a passive recipient of democracy. A lot of us reap the benefits of living in a democracy, but we do very little work for it. And she mentioned that the work isn't done. You know, even though South Africa has come a really long way on its democratic journey, and although we as citizens may be feeling a bit fatigued because of all the challenges we're facing, we can't stop now because we're tired. We can only stop when we're done. I think another takeaway from me is that she said while voting may be an individual choice, democracy is sort of like a group project. And like you said, the idea of active citizenry was really big throughout the entire gathering. There was a panel on coalitions, and the key takeaway for that for me was that no one is coming to save us. You know, Dr. Chikana from the Wits School of Governance spoke about how we need to let go of this idea that there's some savior, some superhero, famous person who's going to come out and take us out of whatever issues we're going through, you know? So I think ordinary citizens really need to do more to participate in the democratic processes beyond just voting every 5 years. Maybe signing up for your integrated development plan process, community policing forums, forming part of the city's budgetary oversight processes, joining local decision-making bodies. There's so much more that we can be doing.
I also want to focus on coalitions. The panel also spoke of the importance of politicians reevaluating who they are actually representing when entering these coalitions, that they should be representing South Africans and not fellow politicians or themselves or looking to enter these coalition agreements just to gain power.
I think people are understandably concerned about coalitions. The track record in South Africa of coalitions isn't too great. But one of the panelists, actually, William Gumede, I believe, he spoke about how of the, I think, 54 African states, apart from Botswana, the two most successful countries since World War II in terms of peacefulness, economic prosperity, and inclusivity are Mauritius and Cape Verde, both which are extensively governed by coalitions. So it's not that coalitions don't work. It's that, as you said, too many of our politicians are entering coalitions focusing on the party and not the people they should be serving.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's what a lot of people mentioned during the gathering conversation as well. But I also want to shift focus a bit before we wrap up this section to a rather lively debate around accountability and the slow pace at which convictions in the state capture matter are happening. Some panelists said, you know, let the process run its course, convictions will follow. And then there were others on the panel saying, you know, we've waited long enough, just make the arrests.
It's understandable why a lot of South Africans will be frustrated. The argument is that the NPA has, over the past 5 years, convicted something like 700 senior government officials. The other argument is that these are sort of low-ranking people. You know, it's not the actual big fish who are ending up in jail. Well, personally, I think that getting the top people in state capture in jail would be a good starting point.
Yeah, definitely. Now, there's, of course, so much more to be discussed. If you want to learn more about this year's The Gathering, head on over to Daily Maverick for extensive coverage on the various panels. It makes for really, really interesting reading. Earlier this month, the Competition Commission's Media and Digital Platforms Inquiry kicked off for a month-long hearing to determine how various social media platforms and other tech giants are impacting local news publications. From accusations of unfair market dominance to platforms seemingly profiting off of the hard work of South African journalists, one thing has become clear in recent days. Regulatory reform is needed. Now, the Media and Digital Platforms Markets Inquiry has been ongoing for a while, but it really made headlines last week when tech heavyweights such as Google and Microsoft appeared before the Competition Commission. At the core of the commission is the question of whether current technology, including AI and algorithms, is unfairly enriching social platforms such as Google, X, Meta, and various AI systems. And essentially, South African news publishers are saying that these online platforms are driving traffic away from their publications by only providing snippets of various articles or, you know, monetizing these posts and those snippets. And I think it's an interesting and a very necessary conversation to be had, considering how technological advancements have rapidly changed the way people consume news.
I also don't think it's a uniquely South African phenomenon. I think globally, there's a growing shift towards people consuming all their news from digital sources. When I speak to my friends and they tell me something that they read, I'm like, where did you get that? And they're like, oh, I saw it on Facebook. And it's like, you know, maybe we should be getting actual sources of news before we just stick to Facebook.
Yeah. And I mean, there is, of course, the question around these complex algorithms and AI and how these systems are favoring certain news platforms over others. And then there's also the question around whether online giants such as Facebook and X are robbing news sites of much needed income by actively encouraging users to rather engage with news stories on the social platform instead of actually visiting the site. Many of the publications have said, such as Reuters, BBC, listen, we're losing money because people are spending more time engaging with our content on other platforms and we're losing out. So something needs to change.
Absolutely. I think Google has said they don't make any meaningful revenue from news content through their search tool, but I'm not too sure about that. I know X has declined to participate in the inquiry, which is quite disappointing because I think there's a tsunami of misinformation and disinformation on X particularly. So it would be great if they could participate. I also think media houses were already struggling just before COVID, and COVID sort of pushed a lot of them over the edge and it brought the closure of a lot of magazines and small publications. The media landscape, not just in South Africa, but globally, is kind of at a tough place. Newsrooms are shrinking rapidly, which impacts the kind of stories that are being done, the quality of stories that are being done, and at the end of the day, it's a deterrent to the public because you need quality, good journalism in order to be informed.
Yes, and this isn't the first time an inquiry like this has been held. I mean, I remember the case in Australia. They launched their own inquiry and eventually passed a law in 2021 that forced Google, Facebook, and various Meta platforms to sign agreements with news sites that would ensure the various news publishers would receive at least some form of compensation for any news content being used online and being shared on these various platforms, which I think is a pretty fair approach.
There's a couple of countries around the world who are looking at Australia's code as a blueprint for how to subsidize the news and stop the spread of news deserts, which is communities that no longer have a local newspaper. I believe Canada was expected to propose its own version of this, and something similar was going on in the US and New Zealand. So I'm not sure what the commission will decide, but yeah, absolutely, something needs to be done.
If you've spent any time on X or Twitter in recent months, you likely noticed just how unusable the popular social platform has become. With content moderation nearly non-existent, the platform of choice in South Africa has turned into a playground for trolls, cyberbullies, and spreaders of misinformation. But one South African activist is taking a stand. Speaking of big tech companies, I want to turn our focus now to X, formerly known as Twitter, and how it's essentially being weaponized in recent years to target South African activists and journalists. Recently, the Helen Suzman Foundation's former chief, Nicole Fritz, was granted a protection order against a cyberbully. And this is, of course, in relation to her or the organization trying to prevent government from scrapping the Zimbabwean Extension Permit, or ZEP.
So the Zimbabwean Exemption Permit System was introduced in 2009 to regularize the status of Zimbabweans fleeing to South Africa for political or economic reasons. It allows permit holders to live, work, and study in the country. There's quite a large number of ZEP holders who have lived and worked in South Africa legally for over a decade. Then in November 2021, Cabinet announced that ZEPs would not be extended and that permit holders were given a 12-month grace period to legalize their status. Since late 2021, the Department of Home Affairs and Home Affairs Minister Aaron Motsoaledi have faced litigation from the Helen Suzman Foundation, challenging the lawfulness of Motsoaledi's decision. It's been a back-and-forth battle since this legal action has been taken. Nicole Fritz, the former director of the Helen Suzman Foundation, has been heavily attacked on social media. The abuse and threats she received on X were particularly distressing, so much so that it resulted in her taking the individual to court.
She particularly focused on one individual who made some really, really awful remarks and threatening remarks. But what completely blew my mind is that during this court case, the user essentially said, listen, this isn't threatening because Twitter or X didn't remove my tweets. And because they didn't remove it, it means my comments are completely fine. I don't understand why she felt threatened by them in the first place, which I found truly laughable, that was this individual's defense.
I had no words for that defense. It was particularly shocking. I can't believe that's what he went with. But yes, his threats were extensive and fairly regular to Fritz. You know, there were some really graphic things he was saying, you know, threats of necklacing her or causing real physical harm. People think because of X's lack of regulatory mechanisms that saying such things is okay.
Yeah, and that feeds into my next question about moderation specifically. We've all seen that ever since Elon Musk took over then Twitter, you can easily stumble across violent and explicit content, even on the most innocuous trends. When you click on a trend or a hashtag that's very plain, straightforward, nothing political or threatening about it, when you click on that and you start going through the various posts, you come across some things that are just horrific. But also, it has become a place where outright harassment goes completely unchecked. And that just reinforces the idea that all of this bullying and threatening is totally okay.
There is zero moderation with the content on the platform. You're likely to stumble across something really graphic. You know, a few weeks ago, there were those sexually explicit deepfakes of Taylor Swift. You know, it's also happening to just regular, ordinary citizens. And when you report anything like that, which you see, there's almost nothing that's been done. What used to be, for a lot of people, a source of conversation, news, and community has now shifted absolutely for the worst. And experts who have all said that it used to be a trusted news source for them, but now they need to be more skeptical of it. I know a few weeks ago, the European Union regulators were investigating the platform's handling of disinformation, which was the focus of multiple stalled or cancelled independent research studies. One example of a project that's been stalled is a study on child safety on X. The platform was also recently fined by an Australian regulator for failing to cooperate with the probe into anti-child abuse practices. So what's currently going on X is absolutely a cause for concern. I don't see it getting any better.
I've been on Twitter since the day it started. So I've kind of seen how it became this giant that it is today. I absolutely agree with you that it has become this really, really toxic environment where it's just about one-upping each other and bullying and just being downright awful to each other. And then you also have the disinformation and misinformation element to it as well that's just completely unchecked. Styrofoam is no more in Nigeria, that is. This after the Nigerian government made it illegal to use polystyrene, a foam-like substance that can take at least 500 years to degrade. But is a ban really the best solution? Or is taxation perhaps the way to go? Then we keep with environmental news as we celebrate the amazing work done by Gauteng's Green Army. This 6,000-strong group of eco-warriors are cleaning up neighborhoods and encouraging communities to grow their own produce. I want to start off with Nigeria, and they started off the year with a clear message saying that it's time to protect our environment. And the country recently banned the use of styrofoam and single-use plastics, giving businesses in Nigeria about 3 weeks to rid their institutions of styrofoam. Now, some background, Nigeria generates an obscene amount of plastic waste. It's about 2.5 million tons of plastic waste each year. And 90% of that is not recycled at all. So if you just think about that, where do all these plastic items end up? So if you're caught with styrofoam, for instance, in Nigeria, you now face imprisonment or a hefty fine. But I'm kind of wondering as well, you know, is the outright banning of single-use plastics the answer?
I think if you look in South Africa, we do have that plastic bag levy, which is aimed at reducing littering and encouraging plastic bag reuse. I think to some degree it has worked, but the other hand is when you look at the main rivers in South Africa, just the poor waste infrastructure and the illegal dumping sites in these areas results in single-use plastic entering the river streams through the ocean. And I read a really concerning statistic that if we carry on with the way we're going with the plastic pollution, there'll be more plastic than fish in the sea by 2050. So we need to be doing something. I'm not sure if a ban is the best way to go about it. And it's possibly difficult to enforce, actually. Some countries have banned the single-use plastic, such as Rwanda, Kenya, Uganda. But this has been hampered by black market sales, smuggling, and the high cost of eco-friendly packaging material. I think maybe taxing would create incentives for less use of this material. It's been done in Ireland, Belgium, Spain, United Kingdom, and Germany, and the income generated has helped finance environmental projects, education, and awareness-raising measures. I think maybe taxing is the way to go. I know in South Africa, I think we produce around 2.4 million tons of plastic waste a year. Maybe we should try incentivizing businesses to reevaluate their production materials. Maybe this is also an opportunity for startup companies interested in reusable production to come up. I do think that some of the country's retailers are doing their part to help out. I know Woolworths, now you get that reusable bag, which is R8, and that's costly enough to remind me to always carry my bag. Check the 60 in order for delivery. It comes in those brown bags. It's now recyclable with the drivers. The next time you order, you can just previous bag. So single-use plastic is still a massive problem, but I think we've recognized it and we're doing a little bit. I don't know if it's enough, if it's just a drop in the ocean, but we're trying.
I also love the idea that you brought up about saying, let's incentivize people rather, and make it worth their while to want to get rid of plastics instead of just outright saying you can't use it at all. But keeping with environmental matters, you brought this story to us, and I really, really love this story. It's Gauteng's Green Army.
So the Green Army is an initiative by Gauteng's Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Environment. It's proved to be a lifeline not only for unemployed people in the province, but also for the environment. I believe they currently employ more than 6,000 people around the province who clean illegal dumping sites and clear open and green spaces while promoting communal and household food gardens. It forms part of the province's effort to promote sustainability while addressing the scourge of unemployment. I think it's a wonderful initiative. I think it tackles some massive problems that are facing the country, which are unemployment, food insecurity, and just general environmental degradation. I'm hoping it can expand not only in Gauteng, but to other provinces, you know, maybe like the Eastern Cape, where food insecurity qualifies as a disaster. I know some people believe people who are destitute just want to like live off social grants and charity and never want to work, but I don't think that's true. I think a lot of destitute people don't want handouts. They would rather be out there working and putting food on the table themselves. So this initiative, I think, is a good example of alleviating poverty by facilitating self-efficiency, you know, and it kind of, it's like that quote that if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you teach him how to fish, you can feed him for a lifetime.
Absolutely. And I love the idea of paying it forward. You know, that's that it's not just about picking up waste or about feeding communities, but it's about educating them and encouraging them to, in this instance, grow their own vegetables and recycle wherever they can. It's a campaign that's really having a tangible impact on these communities. And that's always amazing to see. So I love stories like this. I'm so happy you brought this to our attention. But that's it for our wrap this week. It's been absolutely lovely chatting to you. You brought some amazing insights to the conversation. And yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up on the gathering. I haven't had a chance to follow everything yet, so that's certainly what I'm going to do. I'm going to head over to the Daily Maverick website to see what else I may have missed. So thank you so much and have a lovely week. And that's a wrap. Join us again next week as we unpack more local and international headlines. Until then, give Carte Blanche and Daily Maverick a like and follow on socials.